It's for all of us once again to have a guest Maggid Shir. Rabbi Feldman has graciously taken up his time, even though he's on his way to Brooklyn. This is not really on his way, but it's a little bit on his way. So he has taken up his time to come share his wisdom, his Divrei Torah with us. Precious Rabbi Schreier, once again, it's the second time Rabbi Schreier is coming to join us just today. And without further ado, thank you very much, Rabbi Feldman.
How are you? Thank you very much, Rabbi Schechter. It's a pleasure to be here. It's kind of on my way. Anything not New Jersey is all in the same category. I was asked to speak for a few minutes about a fascinating topic. First parak of Avodah Zarah, we know, has many fascinating topics, but we were asked to focus a little bit on a very fundamental issue to the nature of Psak. And the question is the passage that appears in the Gemara in the first parak on Daf Zayin, appears in different forms in a few other places as well, in the Maseches Chulin and Daf Mem Dalet, and somewhat in Maseches Nida and Daf Chaf, where we're told that if one asks a Chacham, a Shaila, and he receives a Psak, let's say he's told that this is prohibited or this is Tame, so then another Chacham should not be consulted, and who would then produce a opposite Psak of Mutter or Tahor. So on the surface, it's interesting just to try to figure out who are we talking to. Are we talking to the Chacham, or are we talking to the Shoel? Is this an issue in the Psak itself? Is this an issue in asking Psak? Is this an issue in something else? It's very noteworthy that Gemara is put together with a few other very noteworthy dinim, that the Gemara also goes on to say that if you have a situation where there's already a machlokas, and let's say one side is gadol b'chachmo v'minyan, and one side is more impressive, either as far as their knowledge or as far as how many there are, then we should follow that position. And then the Gemara goes on to say what's probably the most famous klal that comes out from that daf. Essentially, it's not formed in exactly these words, but basically, safek d'oraisa l'chumra and safek d'rabbanan l'kula. So those dinim put together, it's interesting to assume that they're all related. So is this basically a chloe hapsak that we're trying to figure out how to make our decisions, maybe from a posek's point of view, or is this from the asker's point of view? What should he do? He's confronted with a lot of different views. So, okay, he already got an answer. He shouldn't look for a different answer. Or there's already a machlokas. He should go with whoever is bigger and whoever is more. Or maybe he should go with the kula if it's a drabanan, the chumra if it's a daraisa. So it could be all of these are grouped together. In any event, it's a fair question to ask, who exactly are we dressing, and what exactly is this din about? Practically speaking, it's also interesting to try to figure out what impact this has halacha lemaisa. And it's possible, as we'll see, that there are so many limitations on this, that this may have almost no impact halacha lemaisa, so we'll have to see exactly what it refers to. But when it does apply, so the Shach quotes a view from Rishonim, that if the second posek were to come and to try to undo the first psak, it wouldn't take. That if the first posek assured the situation and the second posek now wants to allow it in defiance of this, it wouldn't even take effect. Whatever he wants to allow wouldn't be mutter. So that's pretty significant. So you have to figure out when it applies and when does it apply. So the first question is, why do you have such a din? Why should this be true? What's the reason that this first psak is binding in this absolute sense so that the second posek can't come and undo it? So primarily you find two views in the Ronim, but each one requires a little bit of interpretation. So first you find associated with the Yerushalmi that it's an issue of kavod. That's a covenant for the first posek. The first posek has already issued a psak, so it wouldn't be chavadik for one to now overturn it, for another colleague to come and say, okay, I'm going to undo this psak that the first posek said. That wouldn't be chavadik, and it sounds like that from some of the Rishonim. It also sounds like that from the Gemara in Maseches Nida, where it says, I believe it was Ula, who refused to look at a Amara that he was shown in Rabbi Yehuda's territory, and Rashi explains, he says already that another Talmud Chacham would come here and say he wouldn't look at a Amara in Rabbi Yehuda's jurisdiction, and as Rashi fills in there, Mishum Kvodosh Rabbi Yehuda, it's not Bechavadik for another Posek to come in and interfere with someone else's territory, so to speak. So all the more so, if that Posek has already paskined, has already said what he thinks his view is, it wouldn't be right for someone else to come and essentially overturn that. So that's one idea that you find, that it's Mishum Kavod. There is another idea, which is probably the majority view in the Rishonim. A lot of Rishonim have this idea. The question is, what exactly does it mean? So it's the familiar concept of Shavya Chaticha de Yisure. So through going through this process, a Isser has been created. We're used to this from other contexts, where one can say something or do something that brings upon themselves a state of prohibition. So we find the expression there, Shavya Nafshei Chaticha de Yisuri, that because of what they said, let's say a woman declares herself to be Tmeya, so then that has the effect of giving her a status of prohibition because she said so. So it could be that that's what's going on here. It could be that once you ask the Shaila, the process of asking the Shaila creates its own Isser. So how does that operate? How does that happen? So it sounds like it happens, and this, some of the Rishonim are almost saying this, that it sounds like essentially the Shoel is coming with a commitment. The Shoel is coming with an understanding that when he asks the Shaila, so then that's going to be binding. That he wants to know what to do, and whatever guidance he's going to get, that's going to be effective on this individual. And therefore, it's now law, so it wouldn't be right for someone else to come and undo that. Now there is essentially facts on the ground that whatever has been dealt with is usur, is tameh, is whatever it is. That's probably the intuitive understanding of this phrase that you find in the Rishonim, and that's consistent with a lot of other things. It's consistent, first of all, with the way the psukim sound in Parsha Shoftim. We'll read it in a few weeks, that the whole idea of asisa kashir yerucha, that the rabbinic authority has the binding power to tell you what the din of the Torah is, what the din of the Torah is, and that one who has a shiloh, one who doesn't know what they should do, should go to the authority, and whatever they say is going to be binding. That's what the Pashas, the psukim sound like. So this idea in the Rishonim seems to flow with that idea very well. I think it also flows hashkafically with a certain mentality that we have about Asei L'Charav, the whole idea of going to a posek with a question. And the idea that we have that we discourage, which you might call post-egg shopping or something along those lines, is that the assumption is that when you're asking this authority, it's because you think this authority knows what the truth is, and therefore the answer you're going to get is going to represent the halachic truth. So it would be wrong for you then to say, okay, I got my answer, but I'm not happy with it, so I'll go to somebody else and ask him for an answer. So this view in the Rishonim, if that's what it means, I think fits well with both the mashmos of the psukim and with the general hashkafic attitude we have towards asking shilas in the first place. It's interesting to note that there is a very different understanding you find in some achronim, and the Chuvis Evan Yakara and a few others quote this as well, that they understand that it's not really about anything that the Shoel is doing. That really this idea is what the Nishal is doing. That the Nishal, by being asked the question and by giving an answer, he's creating now facts on the ground that it would be wrong for a different posek to come and try to undo. And that essentially this is a function of the mitzvah l'shmoa divrei chachamim. So since this chacham gives an answer, so once he gives an answer, so now that's again reality. He has issued a psak. So for another talmid chacham to come and say differently, that would go against the newly created reality that this is aser. Not because the shoel was makabel it on himself, but because the nishal, the one who was asked, created this reality by answering the question. So he explains in that sense, and that's why I used the phrase carefully before. Says that's why some of the makoros that have this phrase have the expression shavya chaticha de yisure, and not the more commonly used shavya nafshe chaticha de yisure. Because if we understand that the one asking the shaila is creating a binding situation himself by asking the shaila, so then that fits with the words that we're more familiar with, shavya nafshe chaticha de yisure. He created an isser for himself through asking the question. But this suggestion is different, that it's not that the shoel is causing any problem for himself, it's that the posek, by answering the question, is now creating a new error. So you could leave out the word anafshe according to this suggestion, but it's not going to work with everybody, but theoretically you could leave out that word from the phrase, and he's creating an isser that would be binding, and it would be wrong for someone else to come and challenge that, and that's going to affect the understanding also of how exactly this plays out. So practically speaking, within these suggestions, so we find a number already, just looking at how this is brought lahalacha before you get to anywhere else, there are a lot of tremendous limitations on how this is played out. So first of all, where is this brought lahalacha? It's not brought in halacha in a lot of the expected places. We don't find it really in the Torah or in the Shulchan Aruch or in the Rambam, which is a point that we'll come back to, God willing, in a minute. But it is brought in the Ramah, together with a lot of other halachas. The Ramah in Hilchos Kavod HaRav, since Simon Reish Membeis in Sif Lamed Aleph, so the other Ramah quotes this idea, and he quotes it with a lot of limitations. He says that this is assuming that the second posek doesn't have a major reason to overturn the first psak. He doesn't have some major raya against it. It's assuming that it's not a mistaken psak, a mistaken in the sense of, let's say, Tav B'Davar HaMishnah, something that's explicitly against something else. It's a whole discussion. How would we categorize something if it's what we call Tav Shikul Hadas, if it's something which is a matter of judgment, and then there's different degrees of a mistaken judgment. There could be an overt, demonstrable mistaken judgment. If anyone's going to be in YU this coming year, so this is a first parak of Sanhedrin and the later of Sanhedrin sukkahs. So it's a good segue into the yeshiva's mind. So there are different levels of mistakes you find in the Sanhedrin, you find here also. So if this is somehow a mistake, if the first psak was wrong, so then that's an exclusion. The second posik has the right to overturn the first psak, and a couple of other exceptions. And it's also pointed out in the Ramah that this has to work under the assumption that the Shoel is not telling the second posek that it was already dealt with by the first posek. Because if he tells him it was dealt with by the first posek, so then he can ask the Shaila, because then the second posek can get involved with, maybe he's going to argue about it, maybe he's going to discover that the first psak was wrong, and therefore there could be a discussion and it could indeed end up being something that could be overturned. So it's already noteworthy that here the Ramah is the one who brings the halacha as opposed to some of the other codifiers, and even within the Ramah it's there under a lot of qualifications. It's there with a lot of potential exceptions, which is itself noteworthy. It's also noteworthy you find a couple of other exceptions right off the board. So first of all, the Knesset Gedol and others point out that we're assuming that this is a new Shiloh that came up now. If it was something that was dealt with earlier, so that would be a different story. First of all, let's say if it was dealt with Lakula, if this is something the minig was always to be mikkel, and somebody came and overturned the situation and said that they should be machmir, so then he assumes that would not be in the category of a situation where it would be problematic for someone else to come back and say, now let's go back to what was always the minig and be mikkel. And also, Svarim all point out that we're talking about a situation where it's this case that's being asked about. It's not a situation where the issue was dealt with in the abstract in the previous generations, because then, as some of the Svarim point out, and Marik talks about this, you'd essentially negate the whole history of rabbinic discussion. You'll say, okay, you can never have a machlokus about anything because an earlier authority already paskined on this issue, and so no later Rishon can come, no later Achron can come and argue on it. So no, we're not talking about a situation where it's dealt with in the abstract. We're talking about where your situation right in front of you. There was a posek who addressed this situation right here. So then that's where we have, theoretically, this limitation that we should make a difference. So within these, again, limited circumstances, so then there are other suggestions that maybe nowadays, working off of the Ramah's qualifications, maybe nowadays the whole din doesn't even apply in the first place. Because the Ramah says that if there's some kind of raya that one can bring to contradict what was already said, so then the second posek would have a right to do so. So nowadays, some of the Svarim point out that you have a raya from anywhere, because now we have published Svarim, now we have recorded shitas at everything, so it's very likely that the second posek will be able to open up a sefer and point to a shita that supports his position, and therefore he'll be able to bring a raya that wasn't necessarily available in the time of the Gemara, and therefore maybe the circumstances have changed. So there were those who say that maybe Bizman Hazeh, the hold-in doesn't really have much application. Poskim didn't necessarily take it that way, that didn't necessarily accept that position that it has no application, but they did take note of the fact that the Rambam, again, doesn't bring this. The Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, doesn't bring it. So the Aruch HaShulchan does suggest, even though he talks about the din on his own, but the Aruch HaShulchan suggests that maybe that's why the Rambam didn't bring it, because essentially feels that it's not practically relevant anymore, that we have, since then, we have a sealed Shas, we have all the Rishonim, since then we have opinions on everything, so now anyone can open up a sefer and bring a raya to support his position, so maybe essentially that was why the Rambam didn't bring it. And there are those who point out that if you look at the Rambam in the first parak of Hilchos Mamrim, the end of the first parak of Hilchos Mamrim, it sounds like he doesn't hold from the concept at all. The Rambam over there talks about the fact that when there was a Bezdin HaGadol in Yerushalayim, so then there was never a machlokus about anything, because they could just go to the Bezdin HaGadol and ask all the questions, and you'll get the answer, and that'll be it. And then, once the Bezdin HaGadol was no longer, so that's when we started having machlokus. They said you could have one say this, and one say that, and one say something else, and you'll have to figure out how you can decide what to do. And then he ends off the saying, we say Safik Lahaka by Drabban and Safik Lahachmer by Daraisa. So it's like he's quoting that part of the Gemara. Without the other part, it sounds like he feels, practically speaking, we don't anymore have that situation where one is going to say something that's going to stop someone else from contradicting it. So the Rambam doesn't bring the halacha, and that's how the Aruch HaShulchan understands that maybe it's because, practically speaking, it doesn't really come up with our vast libraries of Svarim and Shitas, where we can always bring a proof for anything. But it's interesting also, as a flip side of this, that this whole question about that? Right. Correct, but I think his point is that it'll be a discussion, that it's not a situation where you stand have one posik saying, this is what I think, and another posik saying, this is what I think. Discussion's always going to be more involved, and it sounds like from the Rambam already that once there's more of a debate to be had, because you can bring a right, it doesn't mean the second posik's right. It just means that it's not any more open and shut. If it was just a question of the first posik saying, here's the story, then it wouldn't be right for a second posik to come and say, well, I think the story is that. But once it's a little bit of a discussion already, and the second posik can say, well, I have a ravid, I have a shach, I have a taz, I have a whatever, so then it's already a little bit different. So there were those who were close to saying the whole din doesn't really apply. And as you mentioned, not everyone was so ready to that, but maybe practically speaking, it doesn't really come up because the way it's formulated in the only codifier who brings it, in the Ramah, that the Rambam's coming before this, but the way it's brought down, it doesn't maybe have so much application in our current situation. But it's interesting also that if the whole premise is that maybe there's a svara you could argue on, maybe that there is a machlokas to be had, so the flip side of that could be, what if the original posek knew all that and prohibited alts chumra? What if he said that it should be usher, not because it's logically usher, but because, for whatever reason, for our society, l'migda milsa, it should be prohibited? So then, that might come out with the other way, that maybe a second posik may not have the right to overturn that, no matter how many rayas he has, because then maybe as a matter of policy, he's obligated to keep that policy going. It's interesting, it also parallels a little bit some of the discussion that we have coming out of Parsha Shoftim, because the whole question of what exactly, it's to speak very briefly, what exactly does it mean when Rashi says, Afilu al Yamin Shu small Shu Yamin, the favorite topic of Rav Shechter's, that it sounds like the Pasuk is telling us that you have to listen to the Bezdin HaGadol even if they say something is wrong, and that's not something that works with other sources in Shas. So how do you understand what that means? So some understand it means when they're issuing a psak or a migdamilsa, when they're being Oker Davar Menat Torah, like the Ramban sounds, when they're saying that we know the Torah says X and we're telling you to say Y anyway, so then you have to listen to them. So in a parallel sense, if a posek said, I don't care what your rayas are, but the migda milsa, we have to prohibit this, so then it may come out that that taka, the new posek, can't undo. There's a long tshuva about this, and the tshuva is Kinyan Torah B'Halacha in the third chelik of Avraham David Horowitz has a whole discussion about the various sources that get involved in this discussion. Maybe if something is the migda milsa, it's not shayach for another bezdin to come and to undo it. So it's also interesting, there is a very long tshuva about this topic in the tshuva of Arkasta D'Anya. It's written by Rav David Sperber. In the third chelik, he has a tshuva where he's talking about a personal situation, a situation where you have a rav of a town who had paskin that a shochet was unqualified. A shochet had done something wrong, and that no one could eat from his shrita. And then now there's a new rav in town, and it turns out the original situation wasn't so pashut. So the question was, maybe we should let the shochet be accepted again. The question was, does the new rav have the right to do that, undoing the psak of the first rav on the gavra, so to speak, that he passed this gavra? So is that a situation of in chacham reshai lahatir? So he goes through the various svaras. There's a pretty long tshuva about this, but he assumes that, so if the issue is covered, so first of all, talking about the Rav Ha'ir by himself, he assumes that the Rav Ha'ir should be exempt from this whole din, because if the issue is covered, so the covered goes to the Rav Ha'ir by his very nature, so he's not mechuyev to be mechabed anybody else. So he should be allowed to overturn the psak of somebody else, because he is the one most worthy of kavod. Now the question, if that was the previous rav, so that gets a little bit more complicated, but at least in isolation he thought that as far as the rav ear, if it's about kavod, that should be accepted. Then he assumes, what if it's about shavi chaticha de isura? So there he's one of those who quotes the Evan Yekara. He thinks it's more about what the posek has created by his psak, and again he thinks that theoretically the rav ear would have priority to override earlier psakim, although it gets a little complicated again if the previous posek was himself the rav ear. He has a lengthy truth about that, but he goes into the various applications of how that would play out based on these svaras. It's also very interesting that if one does follow the shavi chaticha di sura in the more traditional sense, if one assumes it's a shavi anafshe chaticha di sura, that one essentially has taken upon himself a commitment through asking the question, so then one nafkamina that presents itself pretty clearly is, so what if it's not the person who's asking the question? What if somebody else asks the question? What if, and this happens all the time, what if somebody decides to do you a favor and ask a shayla on your behalf? So are you bound by that? So the assumption some of the svarim spell out is that if the idea is that it's a shavi anafshe chaticha deisura kind of idea, so then that would probably not be binding on the subject. Other svaras might play out differently, that if it's about the covet of the original love, maybe it wouldn't be so easy for someone else to over it. It's interesting how some of these svaras apply really both ways, that the whole point we started with before about when there are other svarim that can prove the point of the second posek, so which svar does that fit with? So on the one hand, it seems like it's more consistent with the idea of shavi chaticha disura, that we could say that if the original psak was wrong, so then it's not a binding psak, and therefore a new raya can undo it. But if you look in some of the Rishonim, the way they point out this idea, they use phrases like, if there are proofs that it's a different din, so then it's not a chutzpah, it's not an issue of tznias. It sounds like they're focusing on the covet idea, that it's only a covet consideration if you're just on your own, going to say the opposite. But if you have a proof, then it's not necessarily a covet problem. So here the question also comes up, what if it's not you who asked the question, but somebody else asked the question on your behalf? So then should that be binding on you? And if you say you want to focus on the shavya nafshe chatucha disura kind of svara, so then maybe there's a good case to be made that it's not binding on the subject if he's not the one who asked the question. There's a fascinating kuntras about this point. There was a short sefer that was written all about one case. It was written by a dayan in Egypt. His name was Yaakov Toledano, about 100 years ago, maybe less, where there was a case where the Beis Din had paskined on a woman that she was mamzeres, had paskined that she was the product of an affair that the mother had. And then that was when she was a baby. And then now she's an adult and she wants to get married. And there was a move to revisit the psak. So the author of this sefer, I think it's called Meshav Nefesh, you can find it on the internet. So the whole sefer is about this, that he wants to undo, he wants to look into the situation, and he wants to undo the psak of the original Beis Din. So he has all the arguments, the whole sefer is all the arguments why he thinks it's justified to revisit the question and to declare this woman Muteris Lavo Bakal. But he deals with this question of whether this is a problem of Chacham Shasar in Chaver Shaila Le Hatir. And he considers that, first of all, he thinks that if the svar is Shavya Nafshe Chaticha Disura, so she didn't do this. She didn't ask the Shaila. So the father, who was angry about his wife's alleged affair, he's the one who came with the Shaila, and he was the one who got the psak that she should be considered Asura. But now she's coming with the Shaila, and she shouldn't be bound by the father's Shaila. So he thought that was one argument as far as that's concerned. Then he also gets into, he says, if the idea is Kavod HaRav, he thinks all the more so. He says, no Rav would want to be Makbid on his Kavod when it's an issue of being Matar Samal Lakol. It's interesting, he has a discussion that he assumes, understandably, that this should be comparable to an aguna issue, that the situation somebody is prohibited to get married essentially is almost comparable to a makom igun. So if we say that we try to be makel makom igun, we should try to be makel the situation of also lovo bakal also. So he says if it's an issue of kavod, so he thinks that nobody's going to be makbid on their kavod in a situation like that. But relevant to this point, says in terms of the shavya chaticha de sura, so maybe you could say that, or he thought you could say that since she didn't ask the Shaila, she's not bound by that, and now she's coming with the Shaila's negated to her, so that new Beis Din can take up the issue and come with their own approach. This also affects other issues. There are some Svarim who discuss that, let's say you have, this is really where this kind of thing come up all the time, this is the context of the Gemara in Maseches Nida, that let's say you have a woman who has a Shaila on a Maris, so she goes to a Posek and she gets a Psak of Isser, and then she comes to the husband, and the husband says, what are you talking about? My Posek for sure would have said that's okay, and go back and ask the rabbi I want you to ask. So the same Shaila comes up. So some Svarim write that maybe you could say there as well, that she asked the Shaila, but it affects him, and she doesn't have the right to create an Isser for herself on his Cheshbon, so therefore the fact that it should be binding, that would only be relevant if she was the only one affected, but he shouldn't have to be bound by the fact that she decided to ask the Shaila. So you might be going to ask, but what about the situation if she says Tmei Ani, so then we apply that. You're going to ask? Okay. But if he asked the Shaila, so it shouldn't be...
She says she doesn't be bound by it.
Right, so theoretically it could be cut both ways. Right, theoretically, either one may be based on this, if this svar is accepted, either one could come and say, I don't care that your first psak came back wrong, I want to get the psak that's going to come the way I want it. Theoretically, it could cut both ways. But I thought what you were going to ask is that the din is that if she says, Tmei Ani, and she doesn't have a good explanation afterwards, that's one of the cases where we do apply Shavya Nafshe Chaticha Disur, and that does come on his cheshbon. She is going to be prohibited to him based on her decision to say this. So some who want to say this far, they think there's a difference, that there's a din in Menat Torah that she's nemenis if she says this, so therefore, even though it comes off his cheshbon, so it's going to be binding once she said that because of the halach of Shavya Nafshe Chaticha Disur. But here, the fact that she decides to ask this posik the Shaila that he would never have agreed to, so maybe that's not a din on the same level, and maybe one could apply as far that we wouldn't necessarily say the same kind of approach. There are other aspects. Well, I think we're pretty much out of time, so I'll just mention there are other nafkaminas that would come from the whole sugya of Shavya Nafshe Chaticha De Isure, which is its whole discussion. What exactly is the binding nature of it? Is it about Nemanus? Is it about a Neder? Does it apply to all Dinim? Does it apply to Dinim Derabbanan? There's a pretty extensive literature, but since we're almost out of time, and I think I'm going to have Mincha soon, so I'll mention one issue, just a cute idea I saw some years ago, relevant to Mincha in the summertime, and Kriyashma, which we're reading about in the Parsha. So there is a whole discussion that the Gemara says in the fourth parak of Brachos that there is a machlokus Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim as to when Zman Mincha is, and apparently when Zman Erev is also, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, Plag HaMincha is the dividing line, and according to Chachamim, the Shkia is the dividing line. And the Gemara says, who do we paskin like? We paskin like both. We paskin like either. The Gemara has this very unusual statement of Ta'avid Kamar Avid, V'Ta'avid Kamar Avid. They're both valid approaches. And there's a big discussion in Poskim. What does that mean? That you could switch back and forth from day to day. You could switch back and forth throughout your life. Or you could switch back and forth once. You know, what exactly does that mean? That's a whole discussion practically. But there was a fascinating comment, I thought, I haven't seen it recently, but I think many years ago I saw in the Tshuvas of the Kajik Lover Rav. Kajik Lover Rav was a fascinating machaber in general, always had a fascinating, very creative approach to things. So just in this spirit of what we're talking about, just to share what, if I remember correctly, what he says the reason that we can take either perspective as far as Zman Tefillah, as he says, because the Zmane Hayom have been in progress ever since Sheshes Mei Breishis, when the world was created, so the Zmane Hayom have been in motion. So therefore, it's essentially like the same Chefza that's been dealt with throughout all of history. So he says, there is an idea, he quotes from the Meforshim and the Rambam, that even though one is obligated to follow his own posek, but if you have a cheftza that was actually addressed directly by a posek, and the posek decided that this is mutter, so you have a right to be noheg heter towards that, even if your personal attitude or personal shita would have been different. So it says, when it comes to shkia, when it comes to plak hamincha, these times have been, it's the same plak hamincha that's been there ever since Sheshes Mei Breishis, it's the same shkia, it's the same world that's been going around on its axis ever since. So therefore, when Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim issued a psak on the Zman Hayom, it's the same chaticha, it's the same chefza of meat, so to speak, that was paskened on originally, and therefore you have a right to be heter because of that original psak. A fascinating idea. So therefore we have the right, even if your consistency would otherwise say that you should take one view of the other, so when it comes to Zman Hayom, it's as if you're dealing with the original piece of meat that was paskened on by a Tana, by an Amora, and therefore you have the right to view it that way. It's a fascinating idea. So I think we are somewhat over time. So just quickly review what we spoke about. spoke about the fact that there is these statements in the Gemara, there are these three statements together, that when it comes to psak, so one chacham issues a psak, you shouldn't come and issue an opposite psak. We have a situation of multiple rulings, so then we go after chacham of the minyan, and safek lahakel by drabbanan lahachmer by deraisa. So to focus on this first one, that the second posik shouldn't come and reverse the first psak, so we saw that it's a whole discussion what exactly the application is, that the Shach quotes the Rishonim that the second posik, if he allowed the first situation, it wouldn't even take effect, but we have to figure out when exactly it applies and when it doesn't apply. And we saw there are basically two or three svaras why the whole concept exists in the first place. Either it's an inyan of kavod, as the Rishalmi sounds, and some of the Rishonim sounds, and the Gemara Maseches Nida with Rashi sounds like it's about kavod. Or is it about the idea of shavya chaticha de isura, that somehow the psak created a isser, created new facts on the ground that would be binding. Sounds like the intuitive understanding is that it's the shoel was ready to commit, and therefore it's some type of a nether, or some type of a reality that was created by the shaila, which, as we noted, perhaps flows well with the psukim and shoftim and the whole hashkafic idea of going after a specific posek. But there are those who understood it differently, that it's not about the shoel, it's about the nishol, that the fact the posek issued a ruling, and because of the mitzvah l'shmoa divrei chachamim, that creates facts on the ground, and therefore it's not right for someone else to contradict that because it's now a halachic reality. He talked about how some of the limitations that we find, that the only codifier who really brings this is the Ramah. It's not in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, and the Ramah brings it with a ton of limitations, that if there's any reason to disagree with the first one, if it's a mistake, if there are rais that can be brought, if it's a tos b'davar ha-mishnah, if there are other factors that could be involved, maybe even shikol hadas, if it's a shikol hadas that you can substantiate, so then those are all reasons one could justify having a different psak, and that's why the shoal is allowed to ask the question if he spells out that he asked the question the first time. And this whole idea, which is based on Rishonim, that if there's some basis to argue, then it's okay. So that seems to go best with the Shavya Chaticha Desur idea, that it's not a psak that's binding if it's a mistake. But some of the Rishonim also invoke in the context of Kavod, that it's not the chutzpah. If you have a proof why you're disagreeing, that's not going to be a chutzpah situation. So I mentioned a few other limitations, that it doesn't apply if the situation was no ikhata beforehand, or if the situation was dealt with in the abstract, but not in this case here, otherwise that would nullify all debates and all Rishonim. And that there's some question whether the whole concept applies b'zman hazeh at all, because we have svarim to look up and we have the ability to bring raya from anything. And some suggest, the Aruch HaShulchan suggests, and others, that's why the Rambam doesn't bring it, because practically it doesn't really come up. And it sounds like from the Rambam, in fact, that maybe he doesn't hold from the whole idea. And then we noted paradoxically that as much as the ability to disagree with the svarim might be a reason not to have this, but if the first psak was mishum chumra, mishum migdamilsa, so then maybe that's the reason why the second posik cannot undo it. Then we talked about the question whether this applies to the Rav Ha'ir, how there might be some reason to say the Rav Ha'ir, first of all, doesn't have to show deference to others, also doesn't necessarily have to worry that a halachic reality was created by anybody else. We talked also about a few other potential applications, about Shavzeh Chaticha Deisura for yourself, so if somebody else asked the Shiloh, then maybe that shouldn't be binding, and that also perhaps has ramification. We mentioned one discussion about a Mamzeres, that maybe it's the fact that her father had her declared a Mamzeres doesn't necessarily mean that she's bound to that psak, and she can still have the issue revisited with a different president. And question even of Heter with Nida for a husband and wife, and maybe the husband has the right to say, go to my posik instead of going to your posik, maybe such a logic could be applied there as well. And then we mentioned that Nafkaminas that come out of Shavzeh Chaticha de Surya in general is a whole sugyan of itself, and if one flows from the other, they would have nafkaminas that go from that. And we mentioned also, relevant to Mincha, the question of the Zmane Hayom, the machlokas about when the Zmane Hayom are, and the idea the Gemara has that you can follow either opinion, thus a creative suggestion of the Kajik lover, that the Zmane Hayom are the same Cheftza Chaticha that was paskened on by Rabbi Huda and Chachamim, and therefore, even if you would have felt otherwise, you have a right to be Nohe Keter on this Cheftza, as if it was that same piece of meat that was originally dealt with, and one has the right to go Lakan Lakan. I thank you very much. Sorry for going a little overtime. Should have a wonderful summer with your Avodah Zarah.
How are you?
Good to be back.
Good to see you.
Yeah, look at you.
How are you? What's your name? How are you?